Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 117.
This week on the podcast, CNN is granted a new lease on life by the latest war zone air travel tragedy and is now in a position to accidentally report real news.
And John Kerry's taking his meeting about a meeting style diplomacy tour to Israel and plans to offer no concessions to anybody.
Granted, YMCA camp sounds terrible, but not as terrible as not being able to tell the difference between laughing children and South American refugees.
And Todd Akin returns just in time to legitimately rape the GOP's 2014 election prospects.
Science finally proves what we've always hoped was true. The conservatives are biologically different. Too bad they don't believe in science.
This week on Hillary Pillory, Hillary Clinton carries W's famously compassionate conservative mantle to a true meeting of the minds, an insurance industry confab.
Apparently, Silicon Valley Technology is now in the business of manufacturing voters to sign the Six Californias petition.
Also, sinkholes. So, that.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. So that's where you should go.
Do that.
We gotta dive in real fast this week because
it is
a big news week.
Who knew?
Not I.
No.
It's the middle of July. Like, what are people even thinking?
I know. Well, we couldn't have foreseen another Malaysia airline disaster.
Holy moly.
I mean, who would have thought?
Nobody. CNN, maybe, was wishing secretly.
Well, they had... People. It was... I was watching... They were breaking this when I was at the gym and the TVs were on. And I literally said to who I was there with, I was like... Well, at least they have all of their experts, like, in the wings.
Right.
Because, like, everybody was standing by at that point.
So yeah, they're just sitting around waiting for a major disaster of the air travel variety to strike.
Right, air or sea.
Air travel. Or sea. Travel is really... Travel disasters are really their specialty there these days. The thing, by the time that I knew this had happened, literally every person had declared that it was their responsibility, but then also declared it wasn't. Like, everyone both claimed it was them and then blamed somebody else immediately.
Right, exactly, because, like, the separatist groups, like, tweeted, I think, immediately, right, that they had, like, shot down a plane.
Yeah, and then Ukraine also somehow took responsibility itself, but then they didn't, then they were like, never mind, it wasn't us.
They realized they didn't want
it. It was like their knee-jerk reaction was to take responsibility for something they hadn't done, and then be like, oh, no, wait, we wanted to make sure someone took responsibility, and then when we learned it wasn't us, that's when we knew it wasn't us.
Right.
So that happened.
Yes.
An airliner carrying all of the great AIDS researchers crashed over Ukraine.
Yeah.
It was oddly flying over Ukraine when it crashed, which...
Well, that's a big question.
Was a big
question. A lot of people have had, because a lot of, you know, a lot of American domestic flights have sort of, like, been avoiding the area, like, since something like April or something like that.
Yeah, well, and most international flights have as well.
Right, the flight path, for whatever reason, is still sort of, like, approved by the people who approve flight paths, which is a curious choice.
It's not the FAA. I was about to say that, but that's American.
Yeah. So I'm not sure why that was the case, but...
There was a map of all of the flight paths of the last 6 months or something that got released. Nobody's flying over Ukraine.
Yeah.
Possibly because pro-Russian separatists are in the business of shooting planes out of the air.
They'd shot a couple down just within the last couple weeks. Like, they shot, I mean, I think one was a Ukrainian helicopter, and then one was a cargo plane.
Right.
That they had shot down earlier, just earlier in the same week. It's like,
yeah, they're up to that.
Yeah, don't fly over that. But regardless of that, I mean, it was a tragic event, but we're now getting into the business of figuring out exactly what happened.
Right.
And that's sort of, like, where we are now.
Right.
I think that we can sort of pretty much assume that it was the Russians.
Yes.
Because there's really no other plausible, you know, option for what could have happened, basically.
There's the U.S.'s story is that the plane was shot down with a type of surface-to-air missile that was made by the Soviet Union.
Right.
So we know whoever... I mean, everything probably there is made by the Soviet Union on both sides, because it's all former Soviet Union. But we know, we assume that whoever it was being supplied by the Russians.
Rebel groups don't just get their hands on these, because they're expensive, and you also have to be, like, really well-trained to be able, you don't just, like, hit a button, and then, like, it goes and, like, shoots a plane down from 32,000 feet in the air. Like, that's not how this piece of machinery is working.
No, exactly.
So, that's why everybody seems to think that it was at least sort of, like, the training had to either people were in the Russian military or training came from them.
Right. Certainly the supplies must have.
Right, exactly.
Because, like we said, this is an expensive piece of machinery.
Yeah.
And then also there have been some weird issues. I mean, one thing we do know is that pro-Russian separatists have been keeping people from investigating this site and have been tampering with the evidence.
Finally, as of today, supposedly
some Dutch people, Dutch investigators got
And they also, like, I think reached, they reached a deal with, like, the Malaysian prime minister, who is, so they're now allowing them access to the site, too.
Right.
And they have also, I think earlier, or later in the day today, actually finally turned over the black boxes, which they had, which everybody was sort of like, why won't you give these over?
Yeah.
Now, I heard somebody talking the other day about, these black boxes probably aren't going to tell anybody
much.
Well,
it's not like black boxes record everything that's going on the ground.
On the ground, that's
right,
the thing.
They'll tell us that the plane got shot down.
We're gonna, exactly. We're going to figure out what happened here through intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's not the intelligence in the black box, because what the black box is going to tell us is that the plane was working fine until it got shot down.
Right.
But it doesn't have some sort of, like, secret knowledge of what happened, like, from the, of the missile that
and in
shot
this
it
case,
down.
It's not like, you know, when planes fall out of the air, we get the black box to find out what went wrong. When a plane is shot out of the air and we all know what shot it out of the air, there's not a technical malfunction to point to. So
no,
we don't need to know what happened.
Isn't doing anybody any
it
good.
Fell out of the air when it got hit by a missile. That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So, but at least they had been accused of going and tampering evidence. They went and took all of the bodies and put them on these refrigerated train cars, but then they finally let Dutch investigators in to take the trains to Amsterdam, where they're going to investigate.
Yeah.
Because the flight was going from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. And most of the people that were killed on the flight were Dutch. Because I think 193 of the 298 people on the flight were Dutch. One of them was a dual citizen. The U.S. media like really went out of their way to find a dual citizen, at least, on that flight. Because there were no Americans
on
the flight. Yeah,
yeah.
And then there were a bunch of Australians and some Indonesians as well, obviously. And people like that. But it was all it was mostly Europeans that were on the flight. So, in any case, the investigation is going to take place in Amsterdam, primarily with Malaysia's cooperation, because poor Malaysia.
I mean,
who could have seen this coming?
Right?
They've like, they lost a plane earlier this year. Literally just lost it. Couldn't find it.
Right.
Just flew away with it. Don't know what happened to it. And now to have this happen?
Oh, God. It's not funny, but I'm laughing.
They're going to have to rename that airline.
Sad. Oh, they're going to have to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's going
to
be fine.
They're going to have to rename it, like, Stay in the Air Airline or something like that. Like,
I know.
Just, it's like...
Ever Safe.
Ever Safe, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like, these are the things that make it, like, EasyJet had some non-deadly crashes, and that airline had to go the way of TWA and all the other crash airlines. Well, this is terrible. This is like a weird act of God. I mean, it's irresponsible that they were flying over Ukraine, but also there were other flights that were doing that. They weren't
they
the
were
only commercial airline that was doing that.
No.
And this is just like a freak accident.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a freak accident if you're a pro-Russian separatist.
Right.
Because you intentionally did it. But it's a freak accident if you're just like a Malaysian person who's operating an airline.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Not surprisingly, Obama's not thrilled with Russia in the aftermath of all
this.
Well,
I mean, this is what...
this is getting ridiculous.
It's getting ridiculous. We had just supposedly... I mean, they have been giving lip service to the fact that they are going to be, like, shutting down these
They're talking out of both sides of their mouths, like, all up and down this issue.
And also, we had just... Because they haven't done anything, we had just actually... Us and Europe had just re-sanctioned them. Not long... I think, like, either the day before this happened or a couple days before this happened. So we're already sort of, like, not happy with them. And then now this happens. And you can't get any sort of straight answers out of Putin. He's denying any sort of, like, responsibility for this. And, like, I guess sort of, like, that's what you do. But on the other hand, like, I think, like, this... Putin has to sort of, like, decide where he's at
at this point.
Because,
on Ukraine.
Like, on Ukraine and also just sort of, like, in the world at large. Because, like, he can't keep pulling these shenanigans, and he's going to be ostracized, like, by the entire rest of the sort of, like, you know, functioning world, basically. And if that's what he wants, then that's fine. But, I mean, like, he's going to have to decide whether he is going to exist that way or not. Because this is not going to... This doesn't fly. Like, you can't just be, like, giving people weapons to shoot down, like, 300 innocent civilians in
You know, we already have a kind of tricky relationship with Russia because Russian weapons wind up in the hands of a lot of terrorist organizations in the Middle East as well. And that... So do American weapons. So we certainly are fighting a weird proxy war over there regardless.
Right.
And more so now than ever. But this is sort of... This is sort of different because this isn't really... We don't really have the same stake in this that we do in controlling oil reserves in the Middle East.
Right.
So this is really just Russia, like, intervening on... You know, this is Russia trying to take over a country. Like, this is sort of different than the weird proxy war we're fighting in the Middle East. And it's a little bit more, you know, it's a strategy that in certain ways matches our own involvement in the world at large. America certainly likes to feel like they're the only people they can get away with that.
Yeah.
And I can understand why Russia at some points has been like, fuck you. But yeah. I also feel like Russia sort of hasn't earned the kind of like, the kind of, because, you know, the Cold War is over, they ultimately sort of fell to our kind of like line of,
right,
you know, government, at least. They haven't really earned the ability to go back to being the Soviet Union again.
No. And they haven't,
in a way that doesn't draw ire from the rest of the Western world.
Right. And they also haven't learned the lessons from America, where like you at least have to make up good excuses,
exactly,
to go and do some of these things. Like,
you can't
just
pull this bullshit.
This is not a good,
this is not a good idea.
You don't have any good reasons.
He's acting like an asshole.
This. Yeah, exactly.
He's not pretending he cares and then just not caring.
And we often act like assholes, but we always do it under the guise of like some great, yeah, great, you know.
He's fighting a losing PR battle here. And he thinks he's fighting a genius one, because he thinks he's sort of like becoming delusional the way that I feel like people in North Korea become delusional when they're running.
I think so too.
He's starting to feel like so powerful that he doesn't have to give answers to something. Because this is not, you know, this is not like something where he's come up against a big world power.
No.
Ukraine is sort of fighting to maybe be part of Europe, but it's not like Europe is fighting for Ukraine.
Right.
And then he's just basically like walking around trying to be in charge of Ukraine. And it's not like he's fighting America by proxy or anything like that. There's not another power invested in this.
No.
This is just some bullshit.
That's all it is.
It's all some bullshit. It's not having a good effect on our relationship with him, as you might.
It's not.
Not be surprised to hear.
No.
Dianne Feinstein was on Candy Crowley's show on Sunday and said, agreed, Crowley asked if, you know, if this is, a you know, the lowest point since the Cold War, or if we're back at Cold War level tensions with Russia, and she just said yes. Just like, oh.
She would remember.
She would know, exactly, if anyone would know. Well, she said it's tricky because we do need Russia's cooperation on certain things, you know, when it comes to Syria, for example.
Sure.
When it comes to a lot of the proxy wars that we are fighting with them.
Right, exactly.
We do need their cooperation to kind of keep a lid on those things. And it certainly doesn't help that John McCain just has, like, plans to arm the Ukrainians.
Well, he wants everybody.
His plan
armed.
In Ukraine right now is to get involved in a war that we're not involved in, just to show everyone.
Can you imagine all the groups that would be armed under McCain presidency?
Oh, my God. It would be insane. The world would be such a dangerous place, for us especially, because we would have armed all of our enemies.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine what... I mean, these are the same people that have been arming people in the Middle East this whole time. That's why Russia's been arming everyone in the Middle East.
Right.
That's why we're having a proxy war in the Middle East. It's because of people like John McCain trying to arm everyone.
Right.
But, like, so this is his go-to strategy, and it's an old-fashioned idea, and Dianne Feinstein was like, diplomacy needs to work here. Like, this is not a way... Like,
yeah,
we don't need the Cold War to actually happen again. It was sort of unpleasant at the time.
Right, exactly.
And we certainly don't need the Cold War to turn into a warm war.
No. Which it could.
Which it could, and is sort of almost doing in
right.
small simmery ways.
Yeah.
So, in any case, two things. One, stop having airplanes fall out of the sky for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Two, Russia needs to stop being so fucking annoying.
That's it.
That's it. Those are the two things. Moving on.
It's probably more than two things in this.
Speaking of proxy wars.
Story.
Yeah, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I have a lot of things on this.
Right.
One.
This is just a war.
This is just a war, yeah. This is a full-out war.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, though.
Well,
it's not a war between two state powers.
No,
it's a war
true.
Between one state and
a terrorist
group that seems to be stateless.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm going to have a lot of thoughts on it. But Israel has launched a ground invasion in Gaza.
Yes.
A place where they had already killed a lot of people with airstrikes.
Hundreds. The time.
Well, and the death toll is now up to over 500.
Up to 500. Just on Sunday after these ground invasions came. That was the deadliest day. They killed 100 people just on Sunday.
Well, even 20 Israelis died.
Right, which is the most
that
ever happened.
That many didn't die in 2008.
In 2008, and that was like a three-week thing.
Yeah.
So
only 13
day,
people died,
in
I
one
think,
day
in 2008.
More
yeah.
Israelis than they did in 2008.
So that's also troubling. Perhaps not on a scale of 500 people dying.
No.
But I digress.
Most of them... children.
Most of them children. There was an interesting article in New York Magazine that explained why so many children are dying in Gaza.
Because all there's only
everyone
there
is children.
Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, first of all, it probably doesn't help that, like, old people aren't surviving there.
Right.
For a variety of reasons that have to do with both violence and poor access to medical care.
The median age is 18.
Yeah.
And, like, 40% of the population is under the age of 14, I think it said, or something like that.
Like,
I mean,
like
it's
12 or something.
It's ridiculous. If you are
killing civilians in Gaza, you're killing children.
Right.
That's why most of the victims not most of the victims, but a large proportion of the victims have been children.
Not children to kill.
No, they're there's just a lot of children.
Killing civilians, and they're just it's based, mostly on, children. Based on math, they're mostly
children.
Well,
and children. The other issue is that there's no emigration from there.
Right,
so if you're born there, you're stuck in this shitty circumstance.
They have a low infant mortality rate. Most women have like four children or something
like that.
Right,
the average
number. And they can't leave. So it's basically just like, like farming children there, basically is what they're doing. Yeah.
It's sort of troubling because it creates an entire country where there's no long-term memory of any time that they haven't been at war with Israel.
Right, that was one of the big points.
You know,
that none of these 18-year-olds...
There have been three wars since they were born.
Exactly. I mean, every 6 years there's been a war since
and
the time
their everyday life has been sort of heavily, you know, influenced by the high degree of militarism that has been displayed towards Gaza to begin with.
Yeah.
They've constantly been losing territory to, you know, settlers and things like that. So, like, their life has just been one long war.
Yeah.
So it may not be surprising to you that terrorist groups have gained traction in that area.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the time, Hamas is the only group that gets you, like, water and sanitation services and things in a place like that. They do that specifically to get followers.
That's how they're getting followers,
so that they can fire
because
rockets and think
in 2008, Israel took out a lot of the Hamas people and their leaders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, like, they were basically back to where they were pre-war, like, almost immediately, because you go to war and you kill all these people, and then that's, like, the best way to, like, get more people to join.
Up. Like,
this is what people have known for a long
time. So, in any case, the ground operation seems to have no end in sight, or really, like, goals.
Well, it's open-ended.
They don't have, like, specific goals that they could, like, mark off and then be like, we're done with the ground invasion. They're just sort of there.
They're going specifically because there are these,
tunnels
that Hamas
sounds like a TV show.
Right, exactly. Like,
Hamas
to, like,
is, like, sedating and kidnapping Israelis in tunnels, apparently.
Right, that's how they're getting over to into Israel,
yeah.
supposedly, and, like, creating all the shenanigans,
exactly.
other than the rockets they're launching from where they are.
Because they live behind a big wall.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to actually leave.
Yeah.
So they're digging tunnels like everyone in a movie or television show has done since walls have been created. So in any case, this has been a tonally different war than a lot of wars that Israel has waged in that region. The UN is not thrilled with their actions at the moment. The UN is the opposite of thrilled. The UN's like a little pissed off.
Yeah.
They have urged for an immediate ceasefire.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, too, because, like, not really having it with Israel this time around. Because
they did not pay lip service the way they normally do.
And the reason that Netanyahu went in, or sent those ground troops in, A, was to deal with those tunnels.
Right.
But B, they felt like he had some latitude to do so with the international community, because they had just agreed to a ceasefire agreement that Egypt put forward.
Right.
And Hamas
had said no.
So they figured, all right, we're going to be able to go in on the ground now because everybody's mad at Hamas because they're being unreasonable because they didn't agree to the ceasefire.
Right.
So, but that isn't
what happened.
Went down.
No, well, and I mean, I think that it was a sort of misreading of the international scene anyway.
Oh,
because
it totally was.
This, I mean, and we're going to talk about this in a second. This is getting covered very differently than past Israel wars have.
Yeah.
In any case, we will say that something like almost 84,000 Palestinians have been displaced already by this situation. And that's troubling because they don't have anywhere to go.
They don't have anywhere to displace to where.
It's not like they can be like, fine, we'll go to Jordan. Like,
it's not a large area either.
It's not a large area, and they're stuck in there, and they don't have, like, bomb shelters to go hang out in. Like, they're just sort of fucking walking around hoping not to be hit by something in the meantime. Like, it's not, you know, and it's one of the densest regions in the world.
Yeah.
It's like
something like New York style dense.
Yeah, it's like New York style
dense.
It's denser than New York, I think. It's less dense than a place that's denser than New York. I can't remember what the comparison was. But it's a very dense area. So it's not surprising that a lot of civilians are getting caught in the crossfire.
Yeah.
Kerry's heading over
John Kerry to the rescue.
To not solve the problem.
Right. Going to Egypt, he's trying to get everybody on board with the ceasefire that Israel was on board with last week. He wants to get everybody to the table to agree to that. I think that Hamas is waiting, like, on some ceasefire agreement that's supposed to be coming from, like,
Turkey and
somewhere else. But
Qatar
that,
or something?
Yeah, but they are sort of, like, directly, like, related to, like, Muslim Brotherhood-y type things.
Well, those are both governments
so, like,
that
not,
sort of
like,
have a tolerance for the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
In Egypt, it's banned in Egypt because they were causing trouble in Egypt. So,
what's going to happen, obviously, is, like, there's going to be a ceasefire agreement that comes from there that Hamas will agree to, that Israel won't, and then everybody will have their own ceasefire agreements that they've agreed
which
to.
Which is the current situation we're in anyway.
Right, exactly.
Once everyone has a ceasefire that they would agree to that's not the same ceasefire...
Right, you're still just killing
you're
everybody.
Still just at war.
Right.
That's... Currently, there is a way to negotiate with both of them. It's just that they're not the same way. So, the tone in D.C. has been interesting because initially they were also pretty critical of Israel's actions.
Yeah.
I mean, to a sort of surprising degree, because normally they're just sort of in lockstep with Israel. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's been a few reasons that this is getting covered differently. Like I said, we're about to discuss them. But they have really only recently stepped into lockstep, which I felt was progress in my own way.
Sure.
Normally, this has been an issue. Anytime Israel goes to war, it becomes like a very personal thing for anyone who has a Facebook feed and is from New York or somewhere where there's a lot of people who have a sort of Israel right or wrong mentality. A lot of the settlers that are sort of instigating these problems are from New York. It's a lot of Brooklynites living in those settlements in Gaza. And it, you know, there's sort of like a lot of connection because of that to people in Israel and New York. And because of that, you really can't have any sort of opinion on this if it's not just like that Israel is doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And not because of that, because it's not like the 2% of the population that's Jewish is somehow like driving this issue. It's crazy evangelicals that drive this issue in the U.S. It always has been.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because they want to see the Jews go back to Israel for the rapture or whatever nonsense.
Jews have to be in control of Israel.
Exactly. But because of all of the sort of forces, you know, at play in the U.S. for many years, you would never really see D.C. come out and say anything critical about Israel. They would just sort of either say nothing or they would be sort of like Israel's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It's been very hard to do that in this circumstance because the coverage has been very different. And one of the things that we've covered is that a lot more Palestinians are dying than Israelis.
Yeah.
Because of that, Kerry went on the Sunday shows this week and started finally kind of like towing the line on Israel, which was maybe frustrating for me to see, but was not unexpected. You know, he sort of started, he was talking more about how Hamas needs to recognize their own responsibility, which I think would be a fair thing to say if Hamas was like a reasonable group of people who were like reasonably expected to act reasonable.
Well, right. Well, that's what you and I were talking about.
We were talking about this earlier.
I think it's been interesting because, you know, there has been, I think, more sort of empathy for Hamas this time around. And I think it's just because so many of them are dying and B, because a lot of them have been children.
I think you can't forget
about what that group of people stands
for.
Well,
and this is, I think, the distinction, because even in our language, we're like a lot of the time we're failing to make this distinction. There is a distinction between Palestinians and Hamas,
yes,
whereas there's not a distinction between Israelis and Israelis.
Right.
That's sort of the big distinction. Hamas is not the government there.
No.
They're a terrorist group. So
yeah,
like
not everybody.
Expecting them to act like a government is a fool's errand.
Yes.
As you like to say. Yeah. Brent likes to call things fool's errands. I never think of that, but recently started going for it.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's not really even fair to expect them to act that way because their entire purpose for existing is to cause trouble, not to negotiate.
The Hamas charter is basically like all about the eradication of all Jews. I mean, like, so you
that's
can
not
sort
a
of
thing.
Like,
but there's a, but yeah. what there's been a lot of coverage of this time around is Palestinian frustration with Hamas as well as with Israel, which reminds people, I think, that it's not like these children are not Hamas members. They're just Palestinians who are trying to like do things people do, like eat and like play with their friends.
Yeah.
Like it's not sort of the same to say that Hamas should be acting the way that Israel is acting because they are not the government.
Yeah.
Now, diplomatically, there is, you know, a sort of almost government in Gaza that could potentially be empowered to maybe try to solve some of these problems. But it's very difficult for them to do that when they don't really, first of all, they're not really treated like a real government. They don't really, like, have the territory. The territory is constantly under attack from
and
these settlers.
And they've never had Hamas
They've
under
never
control.
Had Hamas I mean, under control in the history of the world because Hamas has been more effective at getting stuff done than they have, frankly. I mean, that's when you need services in, you know, in Gaza or in most, you know, sort of, like, of these Palestinian ghettos, it's Hamas that gets them for you. That's where your trash gets picked up and you get water. And all of the services that people need to live comfortably ultimately end up coming from terrorist groups because that's part of how they build their membership.
Right.
And that's why it's very difficult to sort of like, you know, reason. That's why it's difficult. They don't have the sort of, they don't have the responsibility of a government, but they have a lot of the functions of a government. So it's very difficult to sort of like compare them to like a legitimate government and expect them to act as such.
Right.
They're sort of like, they're like a wartime government. They're just doing whatever the fuck they want.
Right, exactly.
You know? Meanwhile, you know, the usual suspects were out there originally.
Yeah,
like, the Lindsey Grahams of the world have been like, Israel should do whatever they want. They're awesome. We love them. You know, that nonsense. But Netanyahu has recently had to kind of go on a PR defensive tour because he's been getting a lot more flack than I think he's used to getting from the international community. And so he's been trying to sort of, the new offensive has been to paint a picture of Hamas as unreasonable. And he's been sort of going around saying that they don't care about Palestinian lives. I would argue he's not in a position to be making that. If any, you know, I would argue that they don't care about Palestinian lives.
He's not wrong, but neither does Netanyahu.
I don't think that Netanyahu's the guy who can get away with saying that, because Hamas has not been the one to kill 500 Palestinians. Right. So that is a sort of, that's him talking out of both sides of his mouth. And he's also refused any concessions himself, which, you know, under, you know, that's his prerogative and whatever, and they are not negotiating with the government. So I, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that they have to provide concessions, but also, like, if you're not going to provide concessions to a group that has none of the sort of downsides that governments have in terms of how they have to act, like, you got to be sort of prepared for them to not offer concessions either, you know? In any case, this has been sort of, the tone on this has changed recently within the Obama administration, but it was initially sort of critical, which has been interesting. And there was an interesting article about how the American media has been covering it differently and how that sort of contributed, not to a change in policy. We're not going to stop unconditionally supporting Israel, despite the fact that we're paying for all of this. But it is interesting to note that the rest of the country has sort of seen a different side to this issue, in part because social media has been able to cover what's going on in Gaza. You know, you see those graphic pictures of those kids who were killed after playing soccer with media, you know, with a bunch of reporters. And first of all, you're sort of like, Israel, like, get your shit together. Don't be firing rockets next to a media hotel. Are you nuts?
I know.
It's like they think they're fucking invincible to, like, that's, this is the sort of PR, they've been really poor at the PR on this. And they know they don't normally have to care. But, like, they need to start caring because they're all the... you don't kill children who have just been playing soccer with a bunch of journalists. That's that's war 101. But also, you know, this sort of started when there were all these teenagers kidnapping each other, basically. And one of the teenagers that got kidnapped was an American who got kidnapped by the Israelis and beat up pretty seriously by the Israelis. And so part of it has been that the way that this started was actually with them hurting an American, not with Americans being like, oh, poor Israel. It's also worth noting that the Muslim population has really exploded in the U.S. So, you know, the 2% of the population.
And Obama is a Muslim.
And yes, of course, that is it. it's the fact that the president is a Muslim. And, you know, and the fact that there's just been such poor handling of this from the press end. Like I said, our policy is not going to change. But I do feel like we've maybe gotten a step closer to at least acknowledging that there's a cost to this sort of activity. We so rarely talk about Palestinians like it's like their lives are worth anything. We don't care about the death tolls over there. There are death tolls all the fucking time over there. You know, we don't care about the fact that they're stuck over there. We don't care about a lot of the things that humanize this story. And I think we're starting to hear human sides to the story.
I think we're starting to hear the human sides. And I think also that just at least here in America, there just is such a general distaste for war right now.
That's also true.
Whether we're involved in it or not. And there's so much of it going on. There's this going on. There's the Russia-Ukraine conflict going on. I mean, there's Syria. We just got out of two wars ourselves within the last few years. I mean, I think that there's just sort of like this attitude that it's like, why does all of this have to be happening? So, I mean, and you usually side with sort of like the, you know, I'm not going to call Hamas the underdog, but I mean, like in this situation, they sort of are in the sense that, do you know what I mean? Like
we were talking about this earlier, and one of the things that really hasn't been getting coverage is why this is a problem in the first place. You know, no one seems to talk about the root issue. So when we talk about Hamas sort of firing rockets, everyone acts like that's been the starting point for this. And really the starting point is more that, you know, Gaza has been living in a state of, like, terror, basically, anyway, because Israel can't control these settlers who are going in and sort of, like, constantly encroaching on everyone's land. So no one has anywhere safe to be in Gaza. So, like, they have nothing to lose, really, by continuing to fire these rockets, because they live under this state of siege to begin with. They can't leave. They can't live normal lives. Their activities are very restricted. You know, it's very hard to, you know, there were a couple interviews with this fisherman who was talking about, you know, what it's like to be a fisherman in a place where you can't go out to sea, basically. You know, like, there are all of these restrictions that are placed on them. And so because of that, you know, there's sort of like, there's not a lot to lose on their end.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's been sort of at least room to kind of talk about that this time. And then also, like, when Israel goes to war, the U.S. is always implicated. So this really is our war to talk about. You know, we're so heavily involved in their foreign policy. We give them so much money to carry out this policy. So this is in part being done in our names. And that's, I think, another reason that Americans are sort of like, well, maybe we should actually discuss what's happening.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was going to say the root problem, which I did not actually get to. Oh, no, I did get to it. It was it was settlers.
Oh, yeah. You got to it.
I got to it.
You got there.
Yeah. So, so in any case, root problems to discuss. That's it.
Yeah.
We're done.
Those are the hard ones, though.
Those are the hard
ones. That's the problem.
Those are the hard
ones. That's the problem with the root problem.
This is not a hard one, though. That's what's so frustrating about it. It's a pretty easy one.
I know.
Just stop letting people from Brooklyn go and... It's like so many people... Like, every time that they interview someone, it's like... Somebody with a Brooklyn accent. Like, it's just so weird.
That is weird.
Gaza must be really weird.
It must be.
Like, the settlements in Gaza. It must be just really fucking weird.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's, like, really religious people, too. Which is, like, whatever religion you are, really religious people are annoying. And everybody knows that. Oh, boy. Oh, there was a study that... that I sent you an article.
Right.
I mean, this is sort of unrelated. It was actually, the article was about how in the U.S., Jews are actually really popular right now. Like, everyone has a really favorable impression of Jews.
Yeah.
You know what they don't have a favorable impression of? Besides Muslims, which may not be a shock. You know who's disliked by more groups than Muslims, or at least vehemently disliked?
I do,
atheists.
You told me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, atheists.
People are so mean. Atheists are delightful. If I,
well, I think,
do
I
say
think,
so myself.
I think they are.
Yeah, they're wonderful people. In any case.
Oh boy. Immigration update.
Immigration update. Okay. Imagine you're in Arizona, right? Okay. You're at an anti-immigrant protest, as I guess people are finding themselves in Arizona.
And you're a Republican.
And you're a Republican.
You have to imagine that you're a Republican. That's a big,
that's a big part of this
equation.
You see a school bus approach.
Yeah.
Full of children.
Children. Smiling, laughing
children. Smiling, laughing children. What is your first thought? Is it, A, this is a camp, this is a YMCA camp school bus.
No.
Filled with laughing children. Is it B, that this is a camp filled with undocumented children?
Undocumented children come to rape and pillage our state.
Raping and pillaging children.
That's it.
That's what you get.
That's what you think they are.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Okay. So there is
his name?
He's a congressional candidate, but he's an Arizona state rep. His name is Adam Quasman. Got in a little trouble on Twitter this week. He's at this anti-immigrant protest.
Yeah.
And then, so this school bus of YMCA campers approaches.
Yeah.
Just children.
Yeah.
Now, what the articles don't mention, but which everyone who can read basically has to assume.
I mean, come on.
This is in Arizona. They're probably, many of them are probably of Mexican heritage and, you know, other
this was
Latino.
Race.
This is some racism.
He saw a bus full of brown people and knew immediately that they all had to be illegal immigrants who were coming from South America.
Yes. Bus coming in.
Central America.
This is a tweet. Bus coming in. This is not compassion. This is the abrogation of the rule of law.
Mm-hmm. This is a tweet with a picture of the school bus.
Yes. Then he tells a reporter, I was actually able to see some of the children in the bus. The fear on their faces. This is not compassion.
No, it's not.
Mm-mm. Well, they were probably a little afraid that there was a weird protest going on that was anti-immigrant.
Yeah.
As they drove through.
The reporter then, or the person he was talking to then, pointed out the bus was actually carrying YMCA kids, not migrants, prompting Quasman to backpedal his statement. And then he said, those children were sad too, which they may have been.
YMCA kids, not that fun.
It can't be.
Can't be that fun.
No.
So later he tweets, last tweet, not the bus of illegal immigrant children. Thank God.
Oh, yes. Thank God.
Got avoided that one. In the nick of time.
You know he was pissed about, A, the fact that he got it wrong, but B, the fact that there was a bus full of that many children that he thought
that were undocumented, illegals,
but that were actually there maybe legally. Like, right, that was what really
might
burned him.
Probably all American citizens. Probably every single one of them.
That's almost worse.
Yeah.
Right. That they were able to get citizenship.
That's right. In his glorious state of Arizona.
Yeah.
Which at no point in history belonged to Mexico. That is the ultimate issue.
I know.
With anyone, I mean, and I think in New Mexico they've almost accepted this, but they haven't in Texas, California, and Arizona. We're all states that used to be Mexico. A lot of the Mexican people that you see in these states have been here longer than white people have.
We're here when they lived in a different country.
Exactly. Like, calm yourselves down.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, that war on women thing is...
still going strong.
Still going strong. People got Republicans out there saying that it's not almost on the daily, but it
is. That's wrong.
That's wrong, because we're going
to... because we have facts to prove otherwise.
We got three stories this week for you.
First of all, the Democrats in Congress hilariously introduced a bill called Not My Boss's Business Act, in which they would have prevented for-profit companies from dropping birth control from their insurance coverage because they're not allowed to just randomly decide not to to follow Obamacare, because that is the rule of law.
Right. Well, it was fake filibustered.
It was fake filibustered. This is the Senate. Sorry, I said Congress. Oh, okay. I got it wrong.
That's okay. 56-43. So they didn't get the mythical 60 votes that you have to have to pass a bill now these days.
After filibuster reform.
Right. Yeah.
Still, exactly. Somehow any bill can be filibustered.
They had three Republicans vote for it.
Yeah.
Surprisingly. I was actually surprised by this.
I am less surprised that they are Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins. Maybe Mark Kirk surprised me a little.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
not
he's
as much. But
he's moderate.
He's pretty moderate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's a man. Like, usually Republican men aren't extending themselves on the behalf of women.
Yeah.
Like, Murkowski and Collins. All right. Yeah. I'll buy it.
But, you know, this was one of those...
This was a get-them-on-the-record vote.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was going... They knew... They thought that they probably didn't have the votes in the Senate, but even if they did, it was going nowhere fast in the House. So it's sort of like, just make people vote on it, you know?
Right, because then you can later be like, you voted against this bill.
Put the people's names to a no vote.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what you got to do.
Anyway, that's story one.
Story one. Women. Story two is that Republican women themselves are propagating a war on women.
Having a war with themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
The GOP, as you may not be surprised to hear, based on all we've just said, is having a hard time getting women to vote for them.
Right.
There has been a major gender gap in the last few elections, and it's only getting worse.
Yep.
So they decided to have a panel, Women in the Republican Party.
Ah, yes.
And they asked Renee Elmers, who is... Full of only geniuses. Yeah. This is... Renee Elmers is a North Carolina Republican who is a second-term congresswoman, and she's the chair of the Republican Women's Policy Committee, which is a fake committee that doesn't have any ideas.
No. It couldn't.
No, it couldn't, because much to everyone on Earth's chagrin, she had thoughts about women and the Republican Party.
Yeah. She had words. She didn't have very many thoughts.
Yeah. Here's what those words were. Men do tend to talk about things on a much higher level. Many of my male colleagues, when they go to the House floor, you know, they've got some pie chart or graph behind them, and they're talking about trillions of dollars and how, you know, the debt is awful, and, you know, we all agree on that. We need our male colleagues to understand that if you can bring it down to a woman's level, everything that she's balancing in her life, that's the way to go. We got to bring our discussion down to a woman's level.
Right.
Women are too stupid to understand charts.
You
got to
use the
and they
small,
certainly don't know about
tiny
dollars.
Words that they know.
Yes. She also, you know, we've got to give women what they want, including more time in the morning to get ready. That was one of her.
Oh yes, that's right.
Things that women are looking for.
Don't use pie charts.
Don't use pie charts. Don't talk about dollars. Certainly don't use the number trillion.
Trillion. It's too many numbers. That's too many dollars.
That's too many dollars. Yeah. Women don't know about dollars.
Yeah, you have to use terms like that they would know, like if they were, you know, going to be couponing or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. Women only know about household tasks.
Right.
So you've got to use the terminology of house cleaning.
Right.
In order to get them to understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
She would know this because she's a woman.
Right.
So obviously everyone was like, you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And the paper reported her being an idiot.
So she pulled a Sarah Palin.
So she pulled a Sarah Palin. It was gotcha journalism.
Gotcha journalism. Yeah. Ah, yes.
Took him out of context.
What
context? Like, it's really hard to imagine a context in which these comments could have been in a different context.
Well, like, the way that you take something out of context is when you pull, like, a sentence out of, like, a longer thing that someone has said, like, where you've extracted different meaning from something that someone said. We just read to you, like, an entire paragraph that was the full quote of what she read. We read you the context.
Yeah, the context is that she thinks women are not smart enough to know about charts and billions, trillions of dollars and other things.
There's no out of context.
No, the context was there.
That's
it. We provided it.
Right.
Also,
She provided it.
But the context is fairly simple. There's just like, there's not a context in which you can have a full sentence in which you talk about women not, you know, that bringing things down to a woman's level.
Like.
That is the right context.
Nope.
There's no changing the context around that sentence.
No.
The whole thought was there. In any case, not surprisingly, she is one of the Republicans, 138 of them, that voted against the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act in 2013. Yes. She's a co-sponsor of the Sanctity of Human Rights Act, which is an anti-abortion bill that would grant, quote, all the legal and constitutional attributes and privileges of a personhood to fetuses.
Oh, yes. From the time of fertilization, yes, too. So not even fetuses.
Not even,
like a fertilized egg.
Fertilized eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's a real thinker over there. Another real thinker.
Oh, God, Todd Akin?
Is back.
Oh, I just hit the microphone. I got so excited about it.
You were excited about this situation.
Yeah.
Todd Akin has a book.
Oh, my God. And it's called Firing Back, Taking on the Party Bosses and Media Elite to Protect Our Faith and Freedom.
Don't call your book that.
That is too long.
That's too long of a title.
What book are you reading this summer?
I'm reading Firing Back, Taking on the Party Bosses and Media Elite to Like, no, you're not.
No. No one's going to
read that book.
So that's, no. He doesn't have to worry about
that. The people
that
would read that book don't read books.
He can name it whatever he wants to. It's irrelevant.
Pie, the book.
Uh-huh. Get more readers that way.
Yeah, well, I would read a book called Pie more than I'd read a book called Firing Back. He, in the book, expresses some regret that he apologized for his legitimate rape comments of yore.
Yeah, he said, by asking the public at large for forgiveness, I was validating the willful misinterpretation of what I said. Wait, what? What misinterpretation is that?
Well, he tries to clarify.
He tries to clarify.
Like a genius, he decides then to go on MSNBC.
Don't do that either. He's making all the wrong choices now.
So he's talking to Chuck Todd, having a real awkward time of it.
Yeah.
And attempts to clarify his legitimate rape comments by saying, legitimate rape is a law enforcement term, and it's abbreviation for a legitimate case of rape. Because of the fact that it's an abbreviation for legitimate case of rape, the thing that strikes me as odd is that something that was intentionally misunderstood and twisted, it's something that was intentionally misunderstood and twisted for political purposes, because it doesn't make any sense to say a conservative is saying that rape is legitimate.
Tweet us if you can unpack that for us.
Right. Because we can't.
I don't know what that means.
Here's why it doesn't matter. Right. Because his comment was not just... The issue was not just that he used the term legitimate rape, which was hilarious. That was the hilarious part of the controversy. The controversy was that he said that legitimate rape can't get you pregnant.
Well, right. And he went on to... Because then Chuck Todd pressed him on
it. Right. Because he was like, listen.
He was like, okay, whatever you meant to say or didn't say or...
The term legitimate and illegitimate rape is not...
Let's get past that, and let's talk about the science. So, Chuck Todd, doing the people's work here, and said he wouldn't let the science go. He said there have been 6 recent studies, and we can provide you with a footnote for those that say that stress has an effect on pregnancy. Asked if there should be any instance where abortion should be legal, Akin said, I think that what doctors should do is to try to save life, and suggested that he would support abortion in cases where the child has no chance to live and giving birth would kill the mother.
Right.
So, nothing. Basically. I mean...
Certainly not cases of rape, legitimate
or
otherwise,
because
he believes that's not possible. It's not possible to get pregnant from being raped.
Right. But even if it was, though, like, this is the thing. The more that I think about people of his sort of
talk
about abortion, I think that I kind of get it in some
way.
Because, like, well, I just think that they're, of course they don't care about rape or incest or even sometimes the health of the mother, because, like,
in most cases, the health of the mother.
But it's just because they are, I mean, obviously they're focused on the fetus, but it's just about bringing another sort of like soul into the world, especially like if you're a crazy Christian.
Right.
So like, it doesn't matter whether you've been raped or whether you've
been...
The mother is irrelevant in this scenario. It's about bringing more people into God's army, basically. I mean, truthfully, that's really what it is. And if the only way to get pregnant was to get raped by a sibling, then that would just...
That would be fine with
you. That would be fine. Yeah. I mean...
Wouldn't be fine for society.
Society. But, like, they would carry on that way. The Todd Akins of the world.
The Todd Akins of the world. Yeah, I guess, I mean, that has to be it.
That has to be it. Because why else?
And it's easy for him to not care about the mother.
It is.
He's not in danger of being the mother. Certainly.
Nope, he's not.
So, so he doesn't have to worry about her so much. Yeah. Women are stupid anyway. They can't even understand what trillions of dollars mean.
Idiot.
They're useless.
Women.
Yeah.
God. He's also on this book tour,
hilariously,
comparing himself sympathetically to Joe McCarthy, who, as you remember, was the, you know, spearhead of the communist search back in the 60s. 50s, excuse me.
God. A real hero, that Joe McCarthy.
I know.
One of the great heroes of McCarthyism, which is synonymous with witch hunting.
Yeah. But if you ever have fear that you're going to wake up one morning and you're going to be thinking like Todd Akin... It's not going to happen.
Fear no more.
Because we now have science that tells us...
Those people are different.
They're different. Which means we're different,
too,
which is fine. But, I mean, they're different.
They're different.
They're different.
They're different than us. Right. This is welcome news to us.
It is. It should be welcome news to you, too.
Yeah. Well, it's not welcome news because it makes me worry that there are certain people that you just can't reason with.
Mm. That's true.
However, so there was a paper written by a University of Nebraska psychologist who, in Behavioral and Brain Sciences, which is a magazine that allows
that people, I get every month.
Yes, of course. That allows other people in the field to peer review everything, like, in real time, sort of. Oh. So there's all these responses that go up.
Got it.
Every time someone posts something. So apparently, thanks to this paper, which basically said that conservatives think very differently about the world because they respond more rapidly to threatening and aversive stimuli. So, like, things that seem scary elicit like a more violent and militaristic response in them. Unlike, you know, things that seem scary to me make me want to cower.
Right.
Things that seem scary to them make them want to fight. That's basically... But anyway, because this paper got posted in this place where they allow all these peer reviews, there were all these responses to this paper. And in 2003, there was a similar study that said that conservatives are characterized by a need for certainty and order. And that got, like, tons of ire from everybody. Everyone freaked the fuck out about it. This time, everyone was sort of like, yeah, that sounds right. So there were 26 scholars that responded. Something like 22 or 23 of them accepted the general idea that conservatives think differently. And then, you know, maybe added commentary to sort of aid future research.
Yeah.
About three of them rejected the idea entirely. That's pretty good odds. That's a pretty big proportion of people that seem to think, yeah, conservatives might just think differently.
Yeah.
There are some other questions about, you know, generally we think about people who have these sort of like violent reactions to things as being more anxious. And it's actually liberals that are more anxious than conservatives in this study. So it's...
That's interesting.
Liberals are really getting the short end of the stick everywhere. They're passive, but they're really anxious. And they're, but in any case, it's interesting because obviously in both media and in, you know, campaigning and things like that, we like to think that we can change minds. Like, if we reach people with reason, they will suddenly think to themselves, oh, your idea seems logical.
Nope.
That may not be the case. It may be that some people can't be reached.
Yeah, that is sad.
Here are my thoughts on this, though.
Yeah.
Because I think we all know people who maybe sort of would think the way conservatives think if they weren't raised in liberal households.
That's true, yeah.
You know, who maybe don't necessarily, like, who's to have this kind of reaction to things, but know better because they were raised in liberal households and, like, sort of have been indoctrinated about different priorities.
Yeah.
Well, this conservatives and, you know, I don't think the conservatives and liberals necessarily have different priorities in the larger scope.
No.
You know, I think we all want the same things, ultimately. Yeah. We disagree on how to get there. We all just want to be left alone and to, like, hang out and, like, not be bothered, you know?
Sure.
And when I say that, I mean that we should take care of everyone so they don't bother me. And when conservatives say that, they mean that we should get rid of
everybody. Everybody should be on an island.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all have disagreements about how to get there.
Yeah.
But, like, our, you know, conservatives obviously tend to not want to avoid conflict because they are sort of very militaristic.
Yeah.
And the way that they sort of, like, the way that they think is very sort of like lockstep in a lot of respects because that's the culture of conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't value questioning.
No,
it certainly and liberals does. Are over questioning everything. They can't agree on, that's why the Democrats can never get any shit done
because
they're just busy talking about everything to death. And it, you know, it makes sense that conservatives get allied with highly restrictive religious groups because obviously militaristic thinking lends itself to crazy evangelical thinking and other types of craziness.
Yep. One that not questioning, I mean, sort of like
and the not questioning, like, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that also there's not like a sort of black and white sense that, you know, like some people can only be conservatives and some people can only be.
Yeah.
I think like it will affect the way that we choose to explain things in certain
populations. Yeah, I think
because
so.
Because places that are sort of given to conservative thinking may have to be reached with different arguments than places that are given to liberal thinking.
Yeah.
Everyone should ultimately know that me and Brent are right about everything.
Correct.
That's the goal.
If you have questions.
If you have questions, we'll explain them to you in whatever language you need explained to you. I feel like had a lot of success in the past explaining liberal ideology to really conservative conservatives than I have explaining it to moderates. Moderates are the most infuriating people on earth.
Because
they think they're so fucking reasonable all the time.
I know.
They're infuriating. I think the moderates are the people who are given to conservative thinking but know better.
I think
so,
too.
Or people who are given to liberal thinking but are concerned. You know, like, I think that those are the people that are confused.
Well, they're definitely confused.
They're definitely confused.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's actually easier to explain something to someone who's a wingnut a lot of the time than it is to explain something to someone who thinks that they're right because they're moderate.
Right. Speaking of moderates,
it's
time for Hillary Pillory.
Hillary Pillory! Things are heating up.
Yes.
On the Democratic presidential campaign end. After they were not heating up at all because there's not really any good candidates aside from one Liz Warren.
Right, exactly. But now, Liz Warren, she's got her...
She's got her people.
Yes. She's got a Ready for Warren page.
That's right.
Hillary's got... Ready for Hillary's got some competition.
That's right.
Finally.
Finally.
As of last week, I've already liked them on Facebook. I felt really happy about it because I've been having to avoid...
Fucking Ready for Hillary all over the place.
It's still there.
Of course.
I feel like after I've liked the Ready for Warren page...
They should eliminate you from the Ready for Hillary page, people.
Right, exactly.
I know. It's infuriating.
Yeah.
And
like, obviously, I'm not interested.
Obviously, this is a group that is just gearing... It's aiming to convince Liz Warren to run. It's not her campaign.
No, she doesn't.
You know, she hasn't declared anything.
No.
It's... The campaign manager is a Obama campaign alum... and then also, there's also a League of Young Voters founder who's a big, who's a senior advisor to the group.
Yeah.
They have a Twitter account and a Facebook page. They are bringing a van full of supporters to Netroots Nation, which is a progressive thing that happened.
Oh, it happened. I watched that speech.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. She gave like the commandments of progressivism.
Love it.
It was really good.
Well, she's amazing. Yeah. Every time she opens
her
mouth.
But they were all there. You could see it. They had Run Liz Run signs, and that's where that terrible video
that's
was.
That's where the video's from. Because here's from an issue that they're having, is that they're releasing dumb videos on the internet.
They haven't quite pulled it all together yet.
It's real early. Hippie nonsense going on.
They just started last week, and they just went to Netroots Nation.
Right.
So they haven't, they don't, they're not there yet.
They're not there yet.
They'll get there. I trust that they'll get there.
Yeah.
Sort of.
We'll make them get there.
Brent and I
are pretty convinced that we're going to have to help them get there.
We have plans to help.
But in any case, like we've told you before, Liz Warren has both said she's not going to run and released a book, which is basically like declaring your candidacy for president.
Yeah.
So no one really knows what she's going to do.
I am thoroughly convinced that she's running.
And there's an article this week about how important it would be for her to run, even if she's not really going to have a chance of winning, because it will pull Hillary to the left.
Right. Well, and that's what sort of like someone, I think, sort of like interestingly compared her to a potential John Edwards in a race, not the schmarmy asshole of the race.
No, but
like
the populist of the race.
Right, exactly.
The populist John Edwards that both Brent and I voted for.
Right.
And don't feel bad about it.
Right, because he really pulled that. I didn't. I voted for Obama because Edwards dropped out.
Right, yeah, he had dropped down. I voted for him and I don't feel bad about it.
No, I know. But, he, you know, he sort of like really pulled the whole sort of like income inequality. Granted, you know, we didn't talk about it as much as we probably should have, but I mean, he was doing the whole, you know, two Americas business at the time. And that really sort of like pushed everyone sort of in that direction on some level anyway. And she would probably do it better than he did.
Absolutely. She's probably not a smarmy asshole to begin with, so that probably would help.
No.
But also, Brent and I were discussing this earlier, and we don't think she's as out of left field as people kind of like to talk like she is. She's far left, but she's so like aggressively reasonable.
Well, that's the thing.
That she just appeals. She seems like a lovely person to everyone who has to deal with her. I always tell that story about those bankers who had to deal with her when she was, you know, running the Consumer Financial Protections Bureau, because they had no reason to want to work with her or like her. She was certainly not standing for anything that they stood for, and all they could say was that she was lovely.
Well, and I think that she just, her big things, obviously, are like, you know, domestic economic things,
yeah.
And that's what everybody cares
everybody
about.
Everybody agrees on those things.
And she speaks to them in a way that, like, makes, you know, I mean, she speaks
it's accessible.
Really well. I mean, for God's sake, the woman
even
just,
women can understand what she's saying?
Well, exactly. And the woman candidate who is running for West Virginia Senate right now just had her come there and do like a big fundraising thing. Like to think that like
she's been fundraising around town.
She's been blooping around doing some fundraising. But I mean like you wouldn't have her come to a place like West Virginia if you didn't think that she had a message that could sort of like speak
resonate
to people
there.
And like that's just what I just think that she's like, and she isn't the, you know, she has this reputation I think because she's sort of like the senator from Massachusetts, but she's, you know, lived most of her life in Oklahoma. Her mother was a secretary at Sears. Her brothers were in the military. Her father was like a repairman. She went to junior college. She was married early in her life and later got a divorce. I mean, like she has sort of like she's not like some, you know, she's not a rich, she went to Harvard, but she's not Mitt Romney. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
People don't know that about her yet, but they will if she decides to run.
No, I mean, exactly. Yeah, that's, and when your biggest competition is getting called in at the last minute to speak on W's behalf at the Ameriprise Financial Conference.
Right. It's a stark contrast.
That's
a
contrast.
It's a dichotomy that people can there will be a choice.
There will be a choice. Yeah. Hillary Clinton is apparently who you call when W has a knee surgery and can't make it to your financial conference of insurance industry people.
You call.
You know, because she essentially shares a message with him.
Yeah, you call the other compassionate conservative who's currently on the speaking tour right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Hillary Clinton.
She wouldn't talk to Politico about the speech, obviously.
No, none of her aides would talk, answer questions.
But she apparently was willing to take a paycheck to go there, so that's great news.
Yeah. Well, she's poor.
She's poor, yeah.
She has to go.
She's poor, and she's trying to pull together, you know, the remaining threads of her dignity after such an unsuccessful book tour, and she thought, I need to go speak in front of an audience that loves me. I need to see my friends.
Yeah.
So I will go to the Ameriprise Financial Conference. They love me there.
Yeah, I'll be well received.
Uh-huh. Meanwhile, California had a very eventful week.
Yeah, we've got a whole section of California news.
Have we had this much California news in our lives. First of all, a judge blocked the death penalty in California. Go California.
Amazing. I know.
We've been voting on a stupid proposition to end the death penalty for years. We talk all the time about how dumb it is to vote on propositions of things that are blatantly unconstitutional and that should not be left up to voters to decide because that's why we have a fucking constitution.
Right, exactly. We are not constitutional lawyers. We are not judges. No. We are just idiot people who are voting.
And too many of us are being asked to do the dirty work in governing in the California prop system.
Right.
We're like having to make all the decisions for everybody. We don't pay all these representatives to go live in Sacramento for not enough of the year and make these decisions for
us. And we're doing it wrong, obviously. We did it wrong with Prop 8. We did it wrong obviously.
We are wrongdoers a lot of the time.
We don't know what's constitutional and what
isn't
constitutional.
No, we can't know. We can't know. We're a state with the most people of any state in the union. And not a lot of us
are constitutional lawyers or judges.
Have studied constitutional law, and it's a surprising number of us are actually pretty uninformed on those matters. Right. And that's fine. That's why we vote for people to do that stuff for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Because those people are meant to actually do the work to find out what's constitutional and what's not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're being called to the ballot box constantly to do their job for them.
Right.
In any case, death penalty has been blocked by a federal judge. This is great news because it was being applied really arbitrarily.
Well, and that's why. I mean, he didn't sort of really, you know, the ruling was interesting because it wasn't like, you know, the death penalty itself unconstitutional.
But we barely put anyone to death.
Like, since, like, we reinstated it, like, in the 80s or something like that, we've put, like, 13 people to death, and it's been, like, arbitrary.
The most random people,
basically, when you get sentenced to death, it's just a life sentence without parole, but then
You're one of the 13 unlucky people.
Right, exactly. Then maybe you'll die.
Yeah.
And so, like, he was basically like, that's not a law that, like, anybody can sort of, like, uphold in any sort of, like, reasonable way.
No, it's not being applied uniformly. The whole point of a law is that it applies to everyone.
Right.
Except the banks. And this has not been applied uniformly.
Yeah.
In any case, we also are having a terrible drought. It's hard to always know when you're having a terrible drought here because we're always having a drought. So, like, when you move here, everyone is constantly talking about the drought that we're having. And so sometimes you're like, nah, drought.
Yeah.
We're apparently having a really bad one.
This is bad.
So we've imposed mandatory water restrictions.
Which is the first time in state history.
Yeah.
Jerry Brown back in February had,
non-mandatory.
Just some, you know.
Suggestions.
Because everybody was supposed to reduce their water use by 20%.
Right.
Well, to find out, that hadn't happened.
First of all, no one knew they were supposed to do that.
No. Well.
Where were people learning this?
No.
They were watching local news? No one's watching local news. Local news is stupid.
I know.
Even in Hollywood, we can't produce a decent local news show.
No, it's like, amazing.
It's like, who's even in charge here?
We can do a good local news promo.
Well, sure.
Package.
That's right.
I've seen those.
Yeah, no,
they look lovely.
They really do. The professionals are doing it.
The graphics in our local news
look awesome.
Look way better than everybody else's in the country.
That's so true.
Yeah.
You know what doesn't?
The news.
The news coverage.
Yeah, it's terrible.
We're the kind of place that's having people cower under their desks on air during an earthquake.
That's right. I forgot that.
That's what's happening on our local news.
Yeah.
So it may not surprise you to find that no one knew they were supposed to cut their water usage.
Right.
So we've had to get more serious.
Right. $500 fines.
Now we're just asking...
It's serious business.
No, we're asking for money now.
Yeah.
We're taking no prisoners.
We're not asking for it.
No.
We're gonna demand it.
We're gonna demand it. Yeah. but in any case, most people had only reduced 5% according to a survey.
Yeah.
That was probably only the people who even knew they were supposed to reduce in the first place. And everyone has still been carrying on watering their lawns as if that's just supposed to be going on.
And that's the thing. Like, I just...
Stop
you
having
know, it's
lawns,
one of those,
everybody!
Well, I mean, there's so many things that, like, I mean, we really sort of need to do that. You're right. I mean, we shouldn't have lawns. We shouldn't be growing plants that are not indigenous to the desert that need watered. I mean, like, and those are things that obviously are a long way off, just because, like, those are just sort of, like, asking people, I think, to sort of, like, change on a level that, like,
it's also asking people to admit that they live in a desert, which no one in Hollywood's trying to do.
We're going to have to be in a certain sense of desperation, I think, before we get to that point. We're going to have to be at, like, zero levels of water. Like, we're going to have to be, like, getting to the point where, like, we're shutting off water.
Yeah.
But, like, yes, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, like, we shouldn't be having grass.
No.
Which sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but
it's not
just,
ridiculous,
like,
to say here. Well, and here's the thing. We could be having grass in December when we have rain.
Sure.
We should not be having grass in the middle of the summer when it takes so much water to keep it from dying immediately as soon as the sun comes up. That because most lawns here, even lawns that are watered with sprinklers, turn brown in the summer here.
Yeah.
It's a very brown place in the summer, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's not a place filled with beautiful, lush greenery.
Right. But we're not actually going to be finding people for that. We're finding people for if they're sort of like watering it wrong, basically.
Well, yeah,
like
if they're watering the sidewalk, a lot of people are...
People are trying to grow the sidewalk in Southern California a lot, which is, and maybe they're doing it across the country. I have no idea.
Well, but I would assume so.
You see people hosing down their sidewalks all the time. It's just like, don't be doing that.
No, just leave it.
Stop doing that.
Man, it's ridiculous.
So annoying.
Yeah. And also their sprinklers are often just pointing in any direction.
Yeah. Well, you remember the sprinklers over at my house. Like the top was always coming up because it wasn't attached. So it was just sort of like
spraying everywhere.
Blobs of water.
If you've ever tried to go running in the morning or in the evening, you have gotten attacked by sprinklers every step of the way. So. People know. In any case, we'll let you know if this works. We're either going to one day have water or we're not.
It's
hard to know what's going to happen.
Sounds like there could be some revenue from this.
Yes. Interesting. Well, we're a state that now has revenue as opposed to before when we didn't have revenue because we had Republicans running the state.
That's because we raised taxes.
Yeah. When you raise taxes, you'll often get revenue.
Yeah. We're going to talk about a state that hasn't figured that out yet coming up here in a few minutes.
But only after we talk about the sixth California's measure.
Our favorite thing, secession.
Secession. Now, we've discussed this, I think, once before on the podcast.
Yeah, we have.
And we've definitely discussed Jefferson.
We have.
The state in Northern California that wants to secede
It's already been voting on this
for a while.
There's a couple counties up there.
There's this venture capitalist, Tim Draper, not related to Don.
Not Don, no.
who, you know, lives in Silicon Valley and I guess would like to live in a glorious tax-free haven for rich people.
Yeah.
Because he has decided that California should actually be six states.
Yes.
Those states include... the state of Jefferson, which would be in the rural part of Northern California.
Yes.
Wine country in Sacramento, which would become North California.
Yes.
The state of Silicon Valley, which would just be San Francisco and Santa Clara, basically.
Yep.
The Central California, which would be the Central Valley. West California, which would be the Los Angeles County Basin.
Yep.
And then South California, which would be San Diego and the weird parts of the desert.
Right. I love that Silicon Valley is the only named one.
All the
other ones are just directions.
Like north,
except
south,
for Jefferson, but they've been calling it that for a long time. So, everything, he didn't even bother to name any of the other ones because,
West California. LA can have that one.
Yeah.
They're in Southern California, but we'll call them West and they won't get confused. They're fine.
No. Yeah, exactly. But basically he's trying to get this on the ballot in 2016. Yeah.
And as you know, we can vote on anything here.
Yeah,
the ballot is a free-for-all.
Right. So, and he's done it. He's got 1.3 million signatures.
Yeah.
He spent $5 million of his own money on the campaign.
Be doing that.
But there was apparently some shenanigans went on during
Well, first of all, so far about 60% of Californians have said they would vote against this.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
and that's
I mean,
only bound to rise, because this is insane.
Yeah.
Brent and I were talking earlier this weekend, actually, about how dumb it is to give up being the biggest state in the union.
It's
even
ridiculous.
Though, you know, you get all these senators or whatever, and obviously this would have to be approved federally and it would not get approved
approved.
Like, this is not happening.
The rest of the country is
not
sending six senators.
Why would we give up being the sixth biggest economy in the world?
Yeah.
We're our own country. We can set the agenda for the rest of the country if we want to.
We historically have.
If California wants to do something, especially something having to do with, you know, one of the areas that we excel in, like agriculture or media or, you know, technology or whatever.
Yeah, everybody else has to follow.
Everyone just has to fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
So it's like the way that Texas controls the curriculum for the entire United States by placing the largest textbook order in the country. We are the economic version of Texas.
Yeah.
We're a huge economy.
Yeah.
We win at everything. So, like, why would we give that up so some guy can have a tax-free haven in Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Which is what this... is. I mean, that's what that's
obviously...
He wants a friendly business climate in Silicon Valley, so they don't have to... They can just sort of, like, run amok up there. And continue gaining insane amounts of wealth. Like,
that's weird to, like, decide that your specific region is the only one that doesn't have to have any, like, annoying, you know, area. Like, first of all, he somehow managed to only zone rich areas into his plan for Silicon Valley. The other states have rich and poor areas. Some of them have places that have nothing to do with each other. I would argue that San Diego and the weird desert areas outside of San Diego are not related. It's like having New York State and New York City. They're not the same place.
Yeah.
But somehow, that's fine. Who cares? No one cares about them.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the LA County, West California, would have a bunch of random nonsense that we're not trying to deal with in LA. But, you know, as long as Silicon Valley can just be this one tiny little state within a state, who cares?
Yeah.
In any case, apparently, Silicon Valley may have had 1.3 million signatures on the ballot petitions, but they did not have 1.3 million people who knowingly signed those ballots thinking that they were signing for six Californias.
Yeah.
Because a former congressional staffer who worked for Gray Davis filed a complaint with the Secretary of State here saying that there were about a dozen instances of voter fraud on the petitions. Including, you know, instances where either the issue was misrepresented to the signers or people were lied to about what they were signing. Or, you know, I'm sure there are double signatures. There's always double signatures on these things. So he's not really expecting anything to happen now. But if it gets on the ballot, he's planning to sue.
Yeah.
So this is just a troubled.
Yeah.
From the start.
Big time.
Out of the gate. I was just don't be doing this.
I know, right?
Leave us alone.
So, some more state news, and this is fascinating to me. I'm really into this story. This is one of my favorites this week, I think, actually. So, Sam Brownback, who is the governor of Kansas right now, is running for re-election. He's up for re-election in 2014. He is running against Paul Davis, and who is a very moderate Democrat. And just last week, 100 current and former GOP lawmakers endorsed the Democrat in this race.
That's when you know.
And here's why. Sam Brownback is as wacky as it comes. I mean, there's not a crazier person out there.
No.
He's been a senator from Kansas. I think he ran for president once, didn't he?
I think he did.
Yeah.
I mean, not successfully.
Not
obviously, but like,
but I mean,
not
like,
even
not
a little
close.
Successfully.
No,
yeah.
No. But anyway, he sort of, when he was elected sort of like as part of the whole sort of like Tea Party wave. And he really sort of single-handedly got rid of any sort of like semblance of moderates in the state house at the time, like even to the point where like one of the people who is coming out in favor of Paul Davis is the old Republican speaker of the house, because he and Brownback were fighting about what is the central issue in this race, which was some crazy tax cuts, and this guy, the speaker of the house, thought that they were too crazy, and Brownback endorsed his sort of like upstart opponent, and they're from the same party, in his election, and like brought in the Koch brothers, who like funneled a bunch of money into it, and so like got him thrown out. So like this guy, who sort of was like more of a moderate, is like, and 99 other Republicans are like out
for blood.
For blood, basically, because Brownback really sort of screwed him over. So what's at issue here is these insane tax cuts that they, tax reforms. So they pushed through these like two nutty things where they basically like totally gutted the individual income taxes, and they also gave exemptions to like a ton of businesses in the state, like from paying state taxes, which seems like
why
super
do that?
Ridiculous. So, and this was all under the promise that this was like going to get the economy back on track. Like, the job market was going to go through the roof and everything, and just like the whole state was just going to like explode with wealth and everything. But like, unfortunately, due to math, they have realized that all of their revenue went away.
Yeah.
They don't have tax money
when
coming in.
When you don't have tax money coming in, you then don't have tax money
coming
in.
They didn't realize that before.
Right.
Mysteriously.
Mysteriously, when you stop charging people taxes, they stop paying them.
So they've blown a giant hole in the state budget, and they as a state, were one of the lowest job creators in the entire country since these tax cuts went into effect in, I think it was last year.
Yeah,
actually.
I think it was 2013.
Yeah. So Brownback is losing in polls, and one in four, there was a recent poll where he was losing to the Democrat by 6 percentage points, and one in four Republicans are voting for Davis, the Democrat.
I mean,
that is crazy. You as a Republican, like, he should be the Republican, or he should be the governor of Kansas, like, until the end of time if he wants to be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, these are, Obama lost these states by, like, massive deficit. Like in 2008 and 2012.
No, these are, and this is like, you know, we saw something like this happen in New Hampshire, which is a much more moderate state overall, though, where they had a whole, they threw everyone out and put a bunch of Tea Partiers in the state legislature there. Everyone did something nutty, and then they had to throw them all out the next time, and they went much more moderate than they usually do, even though, you know, they're fairly moderate, but they went far to the left of where they normally vote, just to get rid of these crazies who were like trying to carry guns and whatever in the house and stuff like that. This is great because it really touches on like a really substantive issue.
Yes.
Because it's about state revenue and tax cuts and what tax cuts do to state revenue and what they do to job growth and like all of these things that are going to become central issues in the next campaign.
Well, and it's basically
the next national campaign.
When you think about it, it's Republicans agreeing with the Democrats that trickle-down economics doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because that's what this is.
That's what this is.
So that's a huge leap.
Wild. And it also shows, because Brandbeck ate a lot of his own. That's what started this.
Right.
It wasn't just that they were like, oh, tax cuts aren't going to work. They love tax cuts. They don't care about math. They're Republicans.
Well,
what they care about is, A, getting elected, which you can't do when your state's economy's in the shitter because of what you did. But also, they care about not having their own party stab them in the back constantly.
Yeah. Right.
And Brandbeck was not playing for the team.
No. Well, and this, on some level, reminds me a lot of sort of the Eric Cantor situation.
Yes.
On a different level, sort of, because he's running against someone from the other party, whereas that was a primary. But, like, he's sort of crazied himself out of office.
Yes.
Which is sort of what happened with Eric Cantor, where all of those, you know, all of the people in his district sort of, like, got riled up into this crazy frenzy, and then Eric Cantor, who's one of the craziest people on Earth, wasn't crazy enough for them.
Yeah.
So, this is actually almost the reverse of that on some level, because,
well,
like, Sam Brownback
went too crazy.
He went too crazy, and now everybody's like, whoa, you're too crazy. In Cantor's district, it was that he wasn't crazy enough.
Right.
But, I mean, like, you know, he sort of has, this crazy frenzy that he sort of, like, worked everyone up into
was
like,
not what the people wanted.
It wasn't what the people wanted, because they passed all of these crazy policies that don't work and have been proven to not work. So I don't know why they thought they were going to work in the first place. But
well, they're not knowing.
They're not knowers.
But
anyway, so, like, I mean, we might have a Democrat
governor
of Kansas. From Kansas right now.
That's Kansas, the state.
Right.
You've heard of it. It's, we're talking about the same state you're thinking.
Right.
Unbelievably.
It's nuts.
It's nuts. Well, and this is what the Republican Party is sort of on. This is a sort of hilarious version of what the Republican Party is facing on a national level.
It is.
This absolutely is. You know, they've been having this war with the Tea Party essentially all of this time. But what ends up happening is that either the sort of Republicans who are kind of bankrolling these situations love it when people get crazier because they get more tax cuts out of those people and they don't give a shit about social policy and all these other issues. So, like, you got the Koch brothers wheeling all these crazies into office. The crazies end up being too crazy, and they're, most importantly, they're not interested in governing, so they have nothing to lose by not governing, so they're not cooperative. They have no reason to compromise. They're so high on their own genius, which is filled with glaring
stupidity,
holes in facts and stupidity, that they can't be asked to, like, play by the rules.
Yeah.
The rules being that you don't, no, it's party politics. You play with the party.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to play with the party, you run as an independent, and then you don't get elected.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. That's how it works. And if you're Bernie Sanders, you just do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
Because you're a hero.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, you have to play the game to be successful at governing, and these people aren't interested in governing, so they have nothing to lose by just throwing everything on the table and being like, no, we won't cooperate with anyone. And then it ends up falling back. You know, then suddenly the GOP looks like they're at fault. When, I mean, they are at fault, but, like, they're only at fault because they're idiots and they let this happen, not because moderate GOP reasonable people are actually thinking this crazy is the way to go.
Yeah.
They're thinking an amount of crazy is the way to go. Too crazy, but not this crazy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, hilarity.
Crazy. More crazy.
More crazy.
God, do you remember this crazy actress, what's her name? Shannon Guest Richardson. She was the one who sent those ricin letters to she sent them to Obama and to Bloomberg. And then this guy, what's his name?
Mark Glaze, who's the director of Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
Right, exactly. And
she's a gun lover.
She's a gun lover. Right, exactly. She's apparently she was in The Blind Side and The Walking Dead. She's from Texas. She's an actress.
Was she an actress in the sense that she was an extra?
She might have, I was going to say. Exactly. But anyway, she just got sentenced, and she got 18 years, which was the maximum sentence, which is sort of hilarious because, like, she really didn't think that she was, like, doing anything wrong.
No,
because she thought that, she claims that she thought that there would be so much security, like, for all three of those people that, like, obviously none of those people would never be opening the letter, so, like, it would just be fine. Now,
first of all, that's true.
Right.
But is it better to kill a poor letter opener, like an intern? Like, what? What is the thinking there?
Yeah, I know. It's completely, it's nuts. And then she said, what'd she say? Oh, I'm not a bad person. I don't have it in me to hurt anyone.
Mm.
Like, okay.
Unless I'm sending toxic letters to other humans.
Right, exactly.
Or threatening to fire my gun. Right. Because the letter itself threatens to kill Obama. Right.
I was just trying to assassinate them. I wasn't trying to hurt them.
Just assassination threats. I don't see what's wrong with that. God. She also, you may remember, tried to blame her husband for the whole thing.
Oh, that's right.
Initially, she was like, "No, it wasn't me. It was my husband." And her husband was like, "No, that's not right." And then she was like, "No, but I wasn't hurting anybody." Like,
you were
hurting somebody.
Yeah.
And in final news,
fascinating news.
Fascinating news / the worst and best news of the week. Huge sinkhole in Siberia.
Yeah.
Huge.
We don't even know what it is. Like, totally massive.
Something fell in it recently. I can't remember what it was. We couldn't find the story, but I know I read that somewhere.
It's at a place aptly named the End of the World.
Yeah. The Yamal Peninsula in Russia.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the depth of the hole.
No, it's 260 feet in diameter, though. That's huge. That's almost a football field.
That's a big hole.
300 feet. Yeah.
It's near a natural gas field, so people are thinking maybe that somehow there was an explosion, and then something happened in the hole, and then everything fell, whatever.
But there's also, like, a polar scientist who said that there's apparently these things called pingos, which are, like, heaps of earth-covered ice that are found in the Arctic and subarctic, and if that would have melted, global warming, then the earth could have sort of, like, fallen into the place.
Is this going to start happening to us?
I mean, maybe.
People in Canada are just going to be falling in giant holes because of pingos?
Football field-sized holes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is not what you want.
No.
I'm not interested in falling in a hole at all.
No.
Not at all.
Me either. Certainly not one that big.
No, and actually, when the story broke, I was looking at a slideshow of other sinkholes, like you do.
Sure.
Because Huffington Post obviously conveniently offered that right at the end of the article.
Uh-huh. Did you see the tiny horse sinkhole again?
Yes.
Did they show that one?
That's my favorite sinkhole. It's the best sinkhole.
Yeah.
But a lot of the sinkholes are alarmingly perfect circles.
Oh, that is weird.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, this one is.
Yeah, no, this is a perfect circle. Yeah. There was one in Guatemala that was a perfect circle. There was another one that was a tiny perfect circle somewhere that I can't remember. I was scared by how many were perfect. The tiny horse one was fortunately not a perfect circle. It was tiny horse size, so it was just the size of a tiny
horse.
Worked
out perfectly for everybody.
Except the poor tiny horse.
Oh, man.
But other sinkholes seem to be forming perfect circles, like they know geometry.
I don't like that.
I don't like that one.
I don't want sinkholes to have brains.
Plans of any sort. No, it's terrible.
They would have to be nefarious.
Sinkholes are not doing good works.
No.
They're stealing tiny horses. They're stealing cars.
Cars?
They're stealing
Corvettes?
Men watching television in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, they're not up to good things.
No.
In any case, this is alarming news, and we will keep you updated in case anything transpires, but most likely what will happen is that we'll just continue to be a hole. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.